And we are back here on a Friday, TGIF, Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live in the Suburban Chevy Cadillac Saab Studios and brought to you by Modern Mechanical for your heating and cooling needs. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. And the battle for the Little Brown Jug is going to take place tomorrow. And so we thought it definitely prudent to bring in the foremost jug expert in the country. He resides right here in Washtenaw County. Great friend of the show, does great work at mvictors.com. Greg Dooley. Dooley, how you doing this morning, man?
Sam and Ira, it's jug week. It's a good week, and the jug is back, and we'll see it on the sideline and hopefully in the midst of our team captains.
I tell you what, I said it, I gave you that intro, and it's amazingly accurate. You got to understand, Dooley comes in, he has the jug as we know it today with an overlay of the jug as you knew it when it was when they first had it, right? Back in the early 1900s.
Yeah, I brought in my notebook where I've crammed all my research in, and I have a photo here again of the original jug, a photo probably from around 1909 when Michigan got it back, with an overlay of today's jug, which I got to see a couple years ago. And to as part of the research to figure out, well, is today's jug, did it survive all these years, you know, from 1903 to 1909 to today? And that was a piece of the evidence there. Mm-hmm. So it's and Sam will tell you, if it's not the real jug, they did a good job finding a very close match. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, for folks who don't know, I mean, most Michigan fans know the story. Maybe have some young fans know. Tell people the story of the Little Brown Jug.
Sure, I'll net it out. So Michigan and Minnesota played a very fierce game in 1903. It was a tie, 6-6. The game actually ended, depending on who you read, a few minutes or a few seconds early. Minnesota tied the game at the end of the very end of the game. Michigan left the field, left Minneapolis, and left a jug behind. And the story has twisted a little bit over the years, but basically Michigan purchased the jug in Minneapolis before the game and left it behind. Well, after the game, this was a big victory, so to speak, even though the game was tied for Minnesota. The Minnesota equipment manager found the jug and brought it to the athletic director and said, look, Michigan left their jug, and they decided to paint on it and keep it as a piece of memorabilia from the game. And they wrote Michigan jug. They said it was captured. And they wrote in big letters, Minnesota 6, with a big giant 6 and a little tiny Michigan 6 on the back. And the athletic director actually hung this in his office in the Minnesota Armory, and that's where it stayed for 6 years. And when Michigan came back in 1909, the teams decided to play for it. Now, the common story is that Yost found out that Minnesota had his jug back in 1903 and wrote them a letter and demanded it back, and they were told to win it back. But I don't think there's a whole lot of evidence that actually happened. I think it was more likely that they just decided to play for it before the 1909 game. Either way, a great story, a tangible piece of college football history, because this is really the trophy that started all these crazy brass spittoons and oaken buckets that we see out there. This is what really started that. People were envious of this.
We're talking to Greg Dooley from mvictors.com. He's the foremost expert on the Little Brown Jug. So, Dooley, you know, we talked about it at the onset of the conversation here, but all these years, all the handling of the jug, all the hoisting over the heads of the captains and the players, and not once have they dropped it Are we certain that this is the jug that they played for in 1909?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've had the great fortune of being able to see the jug up close a few times, and that thing is nicked and cut, and there are chips off it like you wouldn't believe. So,
so maybe they have dropped it.
It's probably bounced a couple times, okay? Now, that said, one of the things I wanted to do when I started looking into this was to find out, is this jug, did it survive all this time? And I actually brought in a guy named Ryan Forey, and he's the master potter at the Henry Ford Museum, and I showed him photos, and we actually went back out, and John Falk was gracious enough to show Ryan and I the jug again, and he, based on his visual evidence, he's found some notches in some of the original photos that he can tie today. He thinks it has survived. I can tell you this. This jug at least dates back to the 1920s. And it there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it did survive all these years. So,
okay.
And again, if it's not, they did a very good job of concealing that over the years.
How many layers of paint are on this thing? Is it like the Rock over there on campus?
Well, that's
that many layers of paint?
Well, that's a great point, because that is one of the reasons I can tell you that it dates back to the 20s, because Ryan Forey from the Henry Ford Museum pointed this out. He pointed out you can actually make out an older style Minnesota M underneath the existing Minnesota M. You can see it plain as day. I don't know how I didn't see it, but you can make it out. And there are photos of Minnesota players holding it in the 20s where you can see that exact style M. So yeah, there are layers of paint. I think the current paint job actually hasn't changed since the 30s. So the style of the M's and things like that, of course, every year or each time they play, they paint a new score on it. But it's the way the scores have been represented and styled on there has changed over the years, but it's pretty much been in the same configuration since the late 30s.
Talking to Greg Dooley from mvictors.com here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com, talking about the little brown jug. So, Dooley, you mentioned the scores being painted on. So this is not like the Stanley Cup where they can just add another rung, right? So what do you do when they – how much – there's only two slots left, right? So what do you do when they run out of space? How are they going to handle that?
Oh, boy. There are two slots left. That is this year and next, okay? So can you go with the Stanley Cup solution? I don't think you would want to. I think that would be silly. And, of course, I did ask – a few people about this, including Ryan Forey, and he said, well, technically, sure, you could have an adhesive and this and that, but think about how goofy this thing would
right.
look. So what do you do? And I think there are a few options. I don't think retiring this jug and having a new one makes any sense to me from a historical – I'm getting emotional, Sam, thinking about that. So I think this jug needs to be the trophy. It has been painted several times, especially in the early years. I think you could do a couple things. You could actually repaint the columns, just the columns with the scores on them, and make them much smaller, and it would buy us many decades. That's an easy solution. There is more space on the jug to paint. There's plenty of space above the logos. There's space below. I just, you know, you just worry about the thing getting too cluttered up, but there's plenty of space for scores that would probably outlive all the people that are to worry about that now. So there are a few different things you could do. Another thing you could do, it used to have like ribbons coming off the top. You could actually go with the method that they use in Indiana, Purdue, with the old oaken bucket, and maybe have the scores coming out of the top somehow. The other thing is we could complete the existing scoring grids and then maybe put the last year's score or something like that above the team logo that won or something like that. So, yeah, I've thought about this a little bit.
Why don't they consult you? How come someone is in on the phone with Greg Dooley and say, Greg, how should we handle this?
Well, here's the thing, I sure hope we win on Saturday. And I do think we I do think the teams should talk about it this summer coming up. Before we run out. I mean, you don't want to make a decision as you're painting the last score on the jug, decide what to do. So I think it should be discussed. I'm available, and folks know how to reach me, and I would like to be in that conversation. But I tell you, it's funny because Michigan has not been shy about bringing in historians when making big decisions. This isn't a big decision, but it's a decision. And when they decided to renovate the big house, they brought in people like John Bacon and author John Crick to talk about how Yost might think about, you know, the renovation. Maybe they'll do the same with the jug.
All right. I got to tell you. 734-998-1050.
Yeah, we have a caller on the line. We're going to go to Jill. She is a special guest to talk to Greg because she is the lady that actually paints the numbers onto the brown jug. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, guys. Hi, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yes, I have the honor of getting to paint the score on the little brown jug every year. And that goes back a long time because my former husband played ball for Bow and Michigan. And my friendship with John Falk goes all the way back to 1974. And I'm an artist by trade. And I get to paint the... the score on the little brown jug every year.
If Michigan wins.
If Michigan wins. And yes, that's right. It's been under John's care. Very good care, let me tell you. He doesn't take that jug out for any reason other than, his special reports and things like that. But Monday morning, I will go in and hopefully paint the score on it. And we were talking about it just yesterday morning when I was in there seeing John. And, yeah, we only have two spaces left. And we pretty much decided that we're going to probably start going around the top of the jug.
Really? Well, this is breaking news.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know if John's going to get mad at me or not. But it just seems really appropriate to just do that.
Well,
utilize the space that's there right now.
I'm with you there. I think it should be discussed. And, Jill, I think you're just about the only person I didn't speak to directly in my research. But I tell you, though, that John did talk about you when I interviewed him for this. So
boy, you haven't seen Jill. She's only the biggest Michigan fan at the stadium.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jill, should things work out, I'd love to watch you do your thing one of these years when we do get the jug back. Hopefully that's Saturday.
Well, yes, but I don't know if you are around on Monday morning, but it literally, of course, it only takes me about, 5 minutes, but...
Hey, Jill, you're talking to someone who spent about, I don't know how many hours researching the jug, so believe me.
Yeah, you're a piece of history, Jill. You're a piece of history there.
Well, that's great, Jill. I look forward to meeting you, and thanks for calling in. That's outstanding.
Okay. And go Blue, beat the Gophers.
All right, see you Saturday, Jill.
Okay, bye, Sam.
Same place, 8:23 on a Friday. Yeah, she's every game. Jill is waiting for the team outside the tunnel. So at any rate, Dooley, so you just got some, you got, okay, so what about coming around the top?
I worry about it a little aesthetically, but if, you know, if there's someone who can make the call on what to do, it's certainly the great John Falk, who is just an awesome guy. And if you don't have his book, I'll plug his book. If These Walls Could Talk, definitely
out in paperback now with additional chapters in there, looking good.
Look at Ira. Yeah, so it is a great book. But anyway, he's the guy who I think has earned the right to make that call. And if they've discussed it and all that, I'm sure they'll do the right thing and make sure we do the right thing here with this piece of history.
Hey, man, you know, you could pump your suggestion. You know, Big Johnny is an approachable guy. You say, hey, you know, John, how about this idea? See what he says. All you could do is present it and see what he says.
Of course. And she made a good point. A lot of people think that the jug that's in the museum in Schembechler Hall and behind the glass is the jug. And it is not the jug. The jug is hidden away safely. The jug actually was stolen from the administration building right down the street from Schembechler Hall in 1931 and actually disappeared for a couple years. So since then, most of the time, teams have taken very good care of it. Now, we've heard some stories about Minnesota going around town and bringing it to restaurants and things like that.
And drinking out of it. Is that you buy that?
Well, I've heard that, and I'll tell you that on the top of the jug, there used to be a cap with some ribbons on it, and somehow it was twisted off. And right now it's kind of rusty. There's actually a screw in there. I don't know how they, unless they're the perpetrators of breaking the cap off, I don't know how they would have actually drank out of it. And if they did, Sam, that is some nasty, nasty stuff. I hope they put grain liquor in there to kill whatever's been living in there, because that is nasty.
Right. I hear you. Well, Dooley, as always, man, a wealth of information. And this is the kind of historical perspective you can always find at mvictors.com. There's not a site like it on the internet, and certainly no one that does it as well, even if they could do it as well, even if they tried. So, Dooley, we always appreciate your time. It's going to make for a very special segment on Saturday, showing the Key Bank countdown to kickoff.
And don't forget to look me up on Gold Blue Wolverine magazine with all kinds of history there as well.
My man, you do a great job with that as always. So thanks a lot, Dooley. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. See ya.
8:26 on a Friday.